Yeah, so hello and good afternoon, and particular congratulations if you're one of the core group of people who has been with me all the way through the week. I think next time I do this, there's going to have to be some sort of special prize for the people who attend everything. So yeah, I haven't had much turnaround really since doing the presentation at lunchtime because I did an ex I recorded a separate membership site tour at the end of that, so ended up not getting off that till about 2 past 2. But here we are, ready for the power of focus session. So it's the last session of the week, and the aim of this session really, I haven't. It's not like a training where I've prepared slides or anything. Just more of a discussion, really, around the power of focus and just sharing some of the ways that I think about focus and the way that I manage my focus. And I'll talk through it maybe 30, 40 minutes, and we can just see where that discussion goes. And then once we've done that, I'll then take any sort of leftover questions that we might have from the week that any of you have got. Before we get into it, just a few announcements. So, of course, this is the last live session of the week officially. Well, it is the last live session of the week. So, there isn't anything to forecast coming up, although there is something on Monday, but I'll get to that in a moment. So, if you are here, oh, and that reminds me, I must make sure that I don't forget my secret word. Week. So I would be at risk of forgetting the secret word. So let me just set an alarm so I don't forget. So you're going to get a secret word. You're also going to get a prize point to be in running for the prizes for being here. And two of you are going to win a 15-minute one-to-one call with me. And then I'll be doing those with you at some point next week. I also just wanted to remind you that with those prizes, two of the prizes are actually memberships to Business from the Heart. So there's an annual membership and there's a 6-month membership. But what I did was I didn't want anyone who knew they wanted to join the membership deciding to put the decision off until they wait to see if they won. So I incentivized you to go ahead. And if you know that you are planning to join the membership, then make sure that you do join before the end of Sunday. Because on Monday, we'll be totting up the prize points. And if you are the person who's won, say, let's say you're the person who's won the annual membership, we would then refund you what you've just paid, and we'll give you a 1 hour one-to-one mentoring session with me as well. So similarly, if you win the 6 months, then you'll get that refunded, and then you'd get a 30-minute one-to-one with me. Obviously, if the person who wins hasn't joined at that point, then they'll just get the membership paid for. They won't get the one-to-one. And it's impossible to know how it's going to land. I don't get involved with the actual totting up of the points. I have an assistant called Jen, and it's her job to go through the Facebook group every single day and give everyone a point for every comment that they make. She goes through all of the live events in the morning and she checks who commented while we were on live. She goes through the Zoom recordings and she sees who is here live on Zoom, and she basically beavers away, and we end up with this like enormous spreadsheet with everybody's score on it, and we give the prizes to the people who've got the most points. It's that simple. But it's not in any way fixed. It's a very scientific thing, and it's done by somebody who's not me, and then we just have to wait and see. But it's going to be one of you that's been here for the whole week, I'd be pretty sure. But we don't know. We shall know on Monday, and we will announce it on Monday. So anything else? Oh yeah, and then you might see that I am also promoting one more event next week, which is at 7 o'clock on Monday evening, and it's a create a business you can fall in love with workshop. It's a webinar style presentation. It's about 60 minutes of training and then an invitation to join the membership. And I do that for people who either decided not to join Business from the Heart Experience Week, or maybe they did join the week, but then life got in the way and they haven't been able to take part. There's no prizes. It's not part of this week. There's no prizes. There's no Nothing special, but it's just a way for anyone that missed this week, if they're interested in learning more about some of the key principles behind my approach to business and find out more about joining the membership. So the membership, there will be an offer on that Monday evening to join the membership. So for some of you, you might decide that you want to come to that as a bit of a recap. I'd say that if you've taken part in everything we've done this week, if you've watched all the morning lessons, if you've come on the mentoring calls in the evening, I don't think you'll really get much extra from that, and especially if you are joining the membership. But it's more there as a sort of a, like almost a shorter version for people who just want to dip in and get a taste of things rather than fully take part in this week. So if you see that being advertised, you'll know what that's like. That's what that's for, and you're very welcome to be there. I can hear myself already dropping my words. So let's see how I get on. Can I hang out here for a bit longer? So I'm going to talk about the power of focus, and do feel free to make your comments as we're going along through, and you can let me know how helpful this is. There is a session in the membership called The Power of Focus, and this is me just sort of talking about some of the things that I cover in that session. So if any of you are interested in that, there is this other version over in the membership. And the reason I did that session on the power of focus was I remember when I first started my business, and my very first year as a coach, I was trying to figure it all out, like all of us. I was playing around with different ideal clients and different niches, and I did a few little sort of partnership workshops with people, but I was figuring things out. I was getting clients, but I wasn't charging very much at all. And I think my full first year in business, I think it was something like £420. But once I started working with business mentors and filling the gaps in what I don't know, which is very much what I've been talking about this week, what I found was that my business took off really fast. So my second full year in business, I think I did about £9,000 in sales. But my third full year, so that was my first, so actually my first full year in this, with my first full year running this business, I think I brought in about £9,000. In the whole year, right? But in my second full year running this business, I did about just under £120,000. So it was a big jump in a quite short space of time. And people used to ask me, like, what did I think was the reason for that? Like, what was the secret behind that? And I remember saying, well, I remember identifying that I thought that it was three main things, actually. One was that I had a really good understanding of my ideal client from the very day I started my business. I had been on this journey myself of seeking what it was that I was here to do in the world, finding my purpose. And as a result of that, I had trained in a range of different modalities. I had trained as a yoga teacher, meditation teacher, nutritional therapist, NLP practitioner, hypnotherapist, life coach, and energy healer. I'd also gone to Sri Lanka and studied acupuncture for a while, although I didn't qualify in that. And I had sort of tried to start businesses in a number of those different things. I'd had some hypnotherapy clients, but I didn't really love it. I didn't really feel that comfortable doing it. I had had some practice nutritional therapy clients, but I didn't ever do my clinical practice, so I didn't fully qualify in that. I'd sort of been offering services in a lot of those things. So I felt that I really understood my ideal client. And when I started my business, I just seemed to have, when I look back now, I just think how lucky I was really, that I just seemed to have a message that landed right from the very start. My own marketing message hasn't really changed in the last 13 years. I work with heart-centered business owners who want a great business, but they struggle to get enough clients because they feel so uncomfortable with sales. I teach them how to sell in ways that feel genuinely authentic and comfortable so they can finally do the work in the world that they're here to do. It hasn't really changed for me. I sort of had that from pretty much from the beginning. And I was very, very lucky that that just dropped into place for me. And probably, I had a sales background. I had a 20-year sales background. I had a psychology degree. I think marketing just came very naturally to me. I just naturally understood how to communicate in a way that my clients would understand. So I think that was one piece. Another piece was that I was not afraid of sales, right? 20-year career in sales. I was not afraid to have a sales conversation, and I knew how to confidently guide somebody in that conversation, and I knew how to have to speak with that conviction I talked about yesterday that helped people feel that they could trust me and feel very comfortable going ahead and working with me. And of course, what I observed is that even though I could really relate to all the Reiki healers and therapists and coaches and nutritional therapists that I had trained with, what I observed was how they had all this stuff around sales that was really holding them back, beliefs about what it was, really feeling uncomfortable about doing it. So I really had that going for me, that I didn't have any blocks or resistance to actually selling, making offers. So clearly that made a big difference. But the third thing that I used to say made a difference was focus. And some of my focus I had naturally. So some of my focus I think I had naturally because of my work history background, and I'll talk a little bit about that. Some of my focus I think I had naturally, which I didn't know at the time, but I now know myself to be autistic, so I naturally get into a space of hyper focus. But also, and then I learned focus. I learned ways of creating focus in my day-to-day work. So, boundary setting and time management and, creating the blocks of time to really focus and be able to move forward. Now, of course, also, as I was growing my business, I was a single woman who lived alone. I wasn't needing to manage things around children or husbands. So I had that advantage that I was able to make decisions about how I structured my time, and it was easier for me to stick to that than it would be for everybody. But some of it is still useful, and I thought that's what I'm going to talk about today. I'm going to talk about focus, and I'm going to talk about it on four levels. So I'm going to talk about what I call gremlin focus, and I'll explain what that is. But basically, gremlins in the membership are the mind gremlins, the gremlins that live between our ears, that whisper at us and tell us all the reasons why we're not good enough and we can't do that thing. So I'm going to talk about gremlin focus. I'm going to talk about future focus. I'm going to talk about the one thing focus. And then I'm going to talk about today focus. And I'll try and spend, like, I'm going to try and spend not more than, I'll talk about gremlin focus more quickly. And then I'll try and stick to, say, about 10 minutes for each of the other things and see how we get on with that. And then just check in and see where we're at. Now, the only other thing is that I have always, I have a glass of water next to me because I start to lose my voice if I don't drink enough. I was so organized that I got my glass of water, but it somehow didn't make it to my desk. So I'm actually going to disappear and I'm going to come back in like a matter of seconds with my water with me. There it was on the kitchen table. No use to me on the kitchen table whatsoever. So yeah, and the reason for this session on the power of focus is that one of the things that I've observed many, many times, and it doesn't mean that this is the case for everybody, but I've observed very often that people who are really capable and switched on and bright can sometimes really struggle to make progress in their business. And there's lots of different reasons why that can be, of course. And it's not always focus, but I think that a lot of people do have an issue with focus. And I'm not saying I'm perfect. You know, even the stuff I'm going to talk about today, it doesn't mean that I do all of this stuff perfectly all the time. And I think that sometimes when we have like our ideal systems for how we manage to focus and get things done, sometimes it's just having the system that we're aiming for that makes the difference, even if we don't manage to do it perfectly. So let me take a sip of water now. I've gone to get it. Okay, yeah, so that first focus, the gremlin focus, sometimes if we're scattered and unfocused and stretched between too many things and procrastinating, sometimes it's not really about our focus at all. It's about what's going on a subconscious level. And I remember when I first started my business, and it was my first year with this particular business, I just wasn't making any forward progress at all, but I couldn't quite figure out why. And you know, it was a long time ago now, but I just remember feeling like I just would turn up at my desk with all good intentions, but I would just end up not getting anything done. And then a friend would say, "Would you like to meet for coffee?" And I'd go off and I'd meet for coffee, and maybe I'd go for a yoga class. And I think sometimes this is the nature of what we do as well. When we're new to business, we're like, "Oh, great, I can have this amazing lifestyle." But it can be really easy to be like floating around doing all these lovely things instead of getting the business off the ground. And in the end, I worked with Linda Anderson, who's an EFT practitioner. She's in the membership, and she's actually my avatar, my ideal client avatar, because I worked with her, but she was really struggling with with sales at that time and enrolling enough clients. And so she sort of became the ideal client that I designed my marketing message around. And what we identified during that work on unpicking the subconscious blocks was that the reason that I was scattered and procrastinating and not really focusing on getting any one thing done was actually because I had a subconscious fear of success, because I had developed ME, chronic fatigue syndrome, and I was not fully recovered at the time I started my business, but I was on my way to, I was in recovery, I was on my way to recovery, and that I was on a subconscious level afraid that if I got this business going and I was successful, I would be overwhelmed, unable to cope, and I would burn out, and I would end up with a debilitating illness again. And that this was a block that was preventing me. So sometimes our lack of focus is actually something deeper than just something we can fix on a very, on a practical level. You know, it's not as easy as, well, I'm going to time block my calendar and I'm going to make my sure I do my focus work during my times of the day when I've got my best concentration. Because it can be the internal stuff. And we don't anymore have, we used to have monthly mindset sessions inside the membership. And I really believe that the mindset stuff and the subconscious blocks are just as important as the practical. But what happened was over time, people were not attending those sessions. And in the end, we did a survey as well, and you know, the members were speaking for themselves by not attending and not showing up. And I was bringing in guest experts every month to deliver these powerful transformational sessions. And in the end, it was just like, well, I have to, you know, it's the whole give them what they want, not what they need. And I really wanted to just give people what they need. But in the end, we rejigged. We do still bring mindset people in. I've got someone coming in on Wednesday next week to do a session on the energetics of pricing and charging your value. So we do still have mindset sessions, but we just don't have them every single month. But we have got a whole library in the members area from when we did used to bring people in. So we've got a lot of it is EFT based. So, and you can follow the processes of, like there's one on how to shift your pricing block. Like if you've got blocks to if you've got blocks to charging more money, there's stuff there around resistance to sales, resistance to visibility, Self-sabotage. There's quite a big library because we have these sessions regularly for a few years at the beginning. So there's quite a big library of mindset sessions in the members area that you can actually go in and you can just follow along and take yourself through that process of shifting these blocks. And of course, obviously, the other option is to pay to work with a practitioner in the same way that I did. And again, within the membership, we've got lots of practitioners who have all these skills, EFT, hypnotherapy, other forms of energetic clearing, all sorts of things that can help you with this stuff. So that's the sort of the first piece, the gremlin focus, that sometimes it's the unconscious stuff that we need to be addressing. And then the next piece is future focus. And I feel like the future focus is it's such an important piece. And I'm not sure that people are always focusing on it. And what I mean by this is that it's about getting really, really clear on where is it that you're going, stopping to create the vision of the future business that you're on your way to creating. And it doesn't mean that it won't change. And I'll talk about how mine has changed over the years a number of times. But what the fact that the vision changes doesn't matter. What matters is that at any one point, you have a very clear vision of where it is you're going. Because when you've got, and this is why I start, when you come into the membership, I always start everybody with the vision and planning workshop, because it's about getting as clear as you can about that vision, even if you recognize that it will probably shift and change over time, so that at any one point, you are able to sort of filter your decisions through that lens of where I'm going. Because if you don't know where you're going, it's really hard to make the right decisions to help you get there. It's difficult to know what opportunities to say yes to and what opportunities to say no to. So Steve Jobs is very well known for saying that 90% of success is knowing what to say no to, right? And this is there is so much truth in this. Now, at the beginning, the truth is, at the very beginning, what do? We all say yes to everything. We don't really know what's going to take us forward. So we say yes to everything. We go for coffee with that person. We go and do a talk over here. We help that person run their event. But after a while, you gradually become more and more discerning about if I say yes to this opportunity, which is a good opportunity for somebody, is this an opportunity that's actually going to take me closer to my vision or further away from my vision? And I was always very conscious right from the start of my business that every day I spent on something that was not directly in service of achieving my business, my vision, was taking me away from that vision right from the beginning. I remember the very first time I ran a workshop, and it wasn't even under the banner Selling from the Heart, because Selling from the Heart didn't exist. It was doing that workshop that made me realize, oh my gosh, this is what I want to do. I'm going to call it Selling from the Heart. It was my very first workshop for coaches. I think that me and I think we made me and the guy who ran the coaching school who promoted it for me, I think we made about £480 in profit and we split it. So it was not a particularly profitable day. And on that day, somebody who was an attendee said, you know, I work for a recruitment company in London and I know your background is in recruitment. We need someone to come in and teach sales. It's about £3,000 for the day. Would you like to do it? And I remember for a couple of days feeling really conflicted because I really needed that money, right? I really needed that money. But I also had this, there was this nagging feeling. It was just a feeling in my body that this isn't right. And I realized it's because if I had said yes to that piece of work, it wasn't just one day for £3,000. It was also going to be having a meeting with them to find out what they really wanted and finding out about more about it. Then I'd have to spend some time preparing the training, and it was just going to balloon. And I realized that all the days I spent on that were days that I wasn't going to be working towards my long-term vision. And I actually I actually said no to it. Now, at the time, I was still recovering from ME, chronic fatigue syndrome. I had very limited energy as well. But I've always been very good at being able to recognize, is this opportunity taking me in the direction I want to go in? So another example for me would be speaking events. So my second ever business mentor runs very large business events here in the UK. And sometimes I think, oh, maybe I should sort of like rekindle that relationship a little bit because these are he runs huge events. And I think, I'm one of his success stories, like he'd probably be happy to give me an opportunity. And then I remind myself, no, this is the whole style of what he does, it's very masculine. It's very different to the way that I operate. It's very, like gung ho, let's close the sale, make loads of money. The sort of let's get up at 5 o'clock and let's get up at 5 a.m. and, we've conquered the world before breakfast. And the truth is that although in his audience, there would be some people who really resonate with my message, on the whole, his audience are not my audience. And I am much better being in front of smaller audiences of heart-centered business owners whose values align much more directly with mine because there's a deeper connection. They're more likely to stick around and want to work with me. And then what else did I want to say on that particular topic? Yeah, and it really helps with your decisions as well. So when I first started my business, I was following a business coach based in the US. Not somebody I follow anymore, not somebody I rate anymore. So I'm not even going to mention her name. But I remember I thought at the time I wanted a business like hers. She had a multi seven figure turnover business. It was very much based on running live events and online courses. And I decided I wanted to be like her. And every time I had to make a big decision in my business, and I would naturally come from a place of fear and lack, I would ask myself, what would she do? And I remember running my first live event. And it was costing me £3,500 to put on this live event. And I was absolutely terrified. And I wasn't sure if it was the right decision. And I wanted to pull out of it. And in the end, one of the things that would come back to me was I would ask myself, what would she do? Or what would you do if, knowing that you're heading for that business, what would you do? And of course, through that lens, it's like, well, of course, I'd invest the 3,500 in running the event because if that's where I'm heading, I'm going to make that money back at the event. And sometimes, people don't, instead of thinking about, I remember doing the same thing about a laptop in the early days of my business. I really needed a new laptop. I only had this old desktop computer that my dad had cobbled together for me, and I needed a new computer. And I really wanted to go and buy a really lovely Apple Mac, and I'd never had one before. And it was the same thing. It was like, no, I can't afford one. But where am I going? The Catherine of the future, the business I'm going to have, she can afford this laptop. And actually, if I get the best laptop now, it's going to help me grow the business. It's going to mean less downtime with repairs. It's going to mean I can work more efficiently. And so it's filtering. I mean, obviously, I don't mean that you decide today, well, I'm going to be earning a million. So I think I'm going to spend £40,000 on a holiday and £30,000 on a new car this week. It's not like that crazy, but it's more like filtering these decisions through. Instead of filtering the decisions through, I'm never going to succeed. And I'm going to make all the decisions through the lens of, I'm never going to succeed, which will really limit you because you won't want to spend money on anything. It's filtering the decisions through on the assumption that I'm going to create the business that I'm aiming for. If I filter my decisions through that lens, you're more likely to make the decisions that will take you forward. I hope that makes sense. And then the next focus, just sort of time-wise to keep moving, the next focus then from there is the one thing focus. And this doesn't mean, and I talk about the one thing a lot more in the membership, and it came from years ago, probably about 8 years ago, so not the beginning of my business, a good few years into my business, I came across the book called The One Thing by Gary Keller. Now, whoever wins the book bundle from the prizes is going to have this is going to be in your bundle because this is one of my favorite business books ever. And one of the things that Gary Keller talks about in this book, The One Thing, is about the fact that we very, very often naturally, as humans, we want to take on a lot of things. And we think that we're going to make more progress if we take on three or four or five things at once. And everyone has this natural tendency. I know that whenever I run mentoring groups or mentoring programs, and I ask people at the end of the day to say what they're going to be accountable to do for the next month, people always list three or four or five things. And I always try and bring people down to know what is the one thing? Like, if you were only going to get one of those things done, what would it be? Because actually, we can easily set off. And it's not just, remember, we don't just have our business. We have our business, but we also have the rest of our life. So we've got the things we're focused on achieving in our business. We're also accomplishing things in other areas of our lives. Or even if we're not accomplishing, we are at the very least keeping all the plates spinning. So we actually might have lots of things going on in our lives that are not just the business. And it can be really hard to make progress with multiple things at a time. Now, of course, I talked about wealth dynamics sometime this week and how one of the profiles in wealth dynamics is the creator profile. Well, the creator profile thrives on creating new things. So there is a like a balance to find there around, how do you fulfill that need for creativity, but somehow harness it in a way that's taking the business forward. But the one thing is about, no matter if you do have multiple things going on, it's knowing at any one time, and I'm just going to stick with the business context now, it's at any one time knowing, and absolutely knowing, because it's a post-it note and it's stuck right there in front of you, or it's on your wall, or it's somewhere that you see it every single day, that you know at any one point what is the single one thing that is your highest priority to work on right now. And so for me, right now, my one thing in my business is the launch of this membership this week. I'm full focused on it. And this has been the focus of the whole month. Even before any of you received a single email about it, this has been the focus for the whole month. But then when we flip into November, I will have a different one thing. And I'm actually planning on running my first ever online summit style event in early 2025. And my one thing focus is going to switch to planning that summit. So at any one point, I could tell you this is the one thing that is going to have the biggest impact on my business. And it's where my core focus is going to go. And within the membership, I encourage everybody to set their one thing every month and to focus on getting that one thing completed so that then you can move on to the next thing and move on to the next thing instead of having five or six projects all at once and not actually accomplishing any of them. So the one thing focus is, and if you are somebody who thrives on multiple projects, maybe you will have multiple things, but you still always know if I had to choose. If things start to fall apart, if I can't keep up with everything, which is the one thing that is going to get done no matter what? So that's the one thing. And then the next focus was what I would call today focus, because now you know where you're going, at your long-term future focus, and you can filter all of your decisions through that long-term focus of where you're going. Then you've got your one thing focus, which is like the most important thing for you to be focused on right now on any one day. And then you've got what I call the today focus, which is how do you actually focus? Like, what are the things that you do to help you to focus in the day to day? And another of my favorite books, and I really must reread it because it's the sort of book that he's written two books, this chap. And they are both books that I think merit being read every single year. And these books are by a guy called Cal Newport. Don't know if you've heard of Cal Newport. I'll type his name in. And he wrote Deep Work. And then he wrote Digital Minimalism. Now, Deep Work is, I mean, they're both brilliant books. But in Deep Work, he talks about how the fact that we live in such a soundbite society. Everything's so fast moving, and there's so much input. You've got social media, and multiple platforms and notifications going off and advertising everywhere you go and busyness, and we've got so much that we're juggling in our daily lives and stuff that we watch. Everything's getting down into more and more and more and more sound bites. That because of all of this and the constant distractions, that we have actually lost our ability to focus deeply. And I think he's right. You know, I really think he's right that as humans, we've lost our ability to truly deeply focus, and that we don't always set ourselves up for success with focus. Some people do, some people don't. And so, for me, things like today focus, things that I would do in my today, my day by day, to help me focus and therefore accomplish things and therefore have a business that is actually making progress. Because I also know what it feels like to have a business where literally day by day by day, you don't make any progress at all and you don't understand where all those days just went. But to have a business where actually day by day, you do actually make forward progress that is meaningful and it's not just busy work. And even if you only manage to do meaningful, forward moving, focused work, even if you only manage to do it for 2 hours a day every day, you're still moving forward. Even if you only manage for 1 hour a day every day, you're still moving forward. So some of the things that I do, and there's quite a few. So actually, before I start going through them, but inside the members area, for those of you who are joining, and I know that most of you who are here right now have either joined or you said that you're joining, most of you. I don't want to put any pressure on anyone who hasn't said that. And there is a training in the members area called Time and Energy Management. And it's a 2 hour training. I know what you're thinking. Everyone thinks it. I haven't got any time. So I haven't got 2 hours to watch your time and energy management training. But believe me, it's absolutely worth it. And I remember one member watched it and she said, you know, I thought I didn't have time to watch this, but I can already see how I'm going to save about 4 hours a week just by implementing what you've put in here. So what I'm going to talk about now, and probably some things that I'm not going to think to talk about right now, are in the time and energy management training. And these would be things like things like, first of all, time blocking. I plan my day in the morning. I plan it in the morning. I don't plan my day the evening before, and I don't plan my day on a Sunday evening because my brain's usually a bit mushy by the end of the day. I plan my day first thing in the morning, before I start work, because that's when my brain is at its sharpest. And I will plan my day out, roughly what I'm going to do in time blocks through the day. And there's so much I can say about that. So, how will I not go off and say? So, one of the key things there, I think, is to identify for you some core focus time every day. Now, we're all wired differently, and one person's best core focus time is going to be at 11 p.m. My best core focus time is within a couple of hours of waking up in the morning. Not first thing, because I'm quite a bit wake up a little bit groggy. It takes me a while to come around. Within a couple of hours of waking up, I'm in my very best. It's when my brain is sharpest, clearest thinking, most able to focus. And I try and allocate the mornings up until 12 o'clock for focused work. And this is the time of day when I'm going to be doing either working on the thing that I have said is the most important thing to work on, or sometimes it ends up being some of that time is gone on the most important thing, and some of the time goes on things that maybe are not as important, but it still needs a clear brain. So if I'm writing emails or any writing that's going out publicly, I can't do that in the afternoon because my brain falls off a cliff after about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I know it's 20 to five right now, so that should tell you everything. But from about 2 p.m. in the afternoon, my brain sort of falls off a cliff, and it's not my sharp focus time. So being able to set core focus time every day where you go, even if it is just 2 hours in the morning when you first start work, before you switch your emails on, before you switch off social media on, before you switch your phone on, unless, of course, I know some people, some of you have to keep your phone on because you need to be available if your kids need to get hold of you. But if you can, switch everything off. No notifications, no social media, no email, no phone, no nothing, and just sit down and focus for 2 hours every single day. So I'd say that's a quite important piece. Connected with that would be boundaries. So boundaries around when you are available and boundaries around your work time, not just for you, but for other people as well. And I remember when I first nearly the early in the early days of my business, my mum used to phone me during the day. And she would phone me for any reason. And I remember one day saying to her, "Look, Mum, if I was still working in my corporate job in London, would you be phoning me now?" And she'd say, "Well, no, but you're not, are you? You're at home." And I'd say, "Well, yes, but I'm running a business now." Now that was a big stretch at the time because I'm not sure I'd have called it. It was really, but I'd be like, "I'm running a business now. So if you wouldn't call me while I was at work before, then I'd rather you didn't call me now because I'm at work again." And it took a while, but I trained her. I trained my mum. I also trained my friends, and I trained my friends by typically not replying during the day. Because I find, again, you find that the more you're available, the more people think you're available. Now, there will be people with whom maybe you don't set boundaries. There will be people who are so close to you in your world that, of course, they can interrupt you when they need to. But with other people, sometimes we have to be the ones who set the boundaries to make it clear, I'm not available, I'm working. So with friends, I just started to, if they sent me a message in the daytime, I would, or I had a missed call in the daytime, I would get back to them in the evening. And what I find now is that I don't have, friends of mine just understand now that I work during the day. So, and it's a difficult thing, I think, for people with their own business, the boundaries around work and not work. And I'm quite boundaried as well in terms of I've always worked from home. I've been working from home now for 13 years since I started this business. I didn't before then. During my hours that I'm in quotes working, and they're not necessarily completely fixed, but if I'm working, I do not also do my household chores. So if it's my work time, I don't go and do my washing up. I don't put on some laundry. I don't go and start cooking. I don't pop to the supermarket. When I'm working, I'm working. And then when I finish work, that's when I do all of those other things. Because again, it just creates this. My brain is very focused then. My brain knows. It's like I've trained my brain to know that when I'm in the zone where I'm working at my desk, it's not thinking about all of those other things. And I know that particularly for women working at home, if you've got families, it can be really easy to be like, well, I'll just do a little bit of work, then I'll put the laundry on, then I'll just do a bit of work and I'll do this other thing. And in the end, you're not giving your brain a chance to really settle into the focus work that you want to be doing. Boundaries with clients as well, really important. A lot of people have got very fuzzy boundaries with their clients, and it's easy to think, oh, the clients take advantage of me. They just interrupt me whenever they want to, or they want unreasonable things. Client messages me in the evening and things. But more often than not, it's not that the clients are trampling over your boundaries. It's that you have not set out clear enough boundaries to the clients in the first place. And what I've always found is that if I lay out the boundaries to the clients up front, as long as they know about them, they always, always adhere to them. And the clients that would apparently appear to be being maybe inconsiderate or a little disrespectful of my time, those will be the clients that actually they didn't know there was a boundary because I hadn't told them there was. So it's re you're responsible for setting out those boundaries. This is when I'm available. This is how you can reach me, and so on. What else is there? There's energy batching, important one. So this is around, I talk about this more in the time energy management training, but this is around a little bit connected with the wealth dynamics that we operate in different energies. And when we switch from a task that has a very different energy from another, it takes, so there's two things. One, if we're deep in a task and we get interrupted, It can take about 15 minutes to refocus again. So if you're getting interrupted multiple times, then each time you try and refocus, it can take you 15 minutes to get back into the flow. But it's the same when you switch energies in your tasks. And so this would be something like you work with a client, and then you do some accounts, and then you write a blog, and then you have another client, and then a phone call comes in, and then it's a sales call. And then you're doing some social media posting and you're all over the place. And actually, what I do in my business is I have a day. I have a Monday is mostly meetings and admin. Tuesday is for marketing activity. And so is Wednesday in theory, but I never managed to get 2 days on it. Thursdays is a client day. And then Friday is a day when nothing gets scheduled in the calendar. I sort of use it as a general sort of admin. I do my finances on a Friday. So Friday actually, sorry, is the day that I do all the stuff that my brain finds the most difficult. Accounting, anything to do with tech, anything to do with real detail. This is the stuff that I really my brain finds the most difficult. So I put all of that in one day. So then the client work is one type of energy. I'm in one zone of energy. The accounting and the detail stuff is a different type of energy, so they're on different days. Admin and team is a different sort of energy, so that's on a different day. Marketing, which is irrespective of what marketing I'm doing, it's always something to do with taking energy from inside me. I'm very introverted. It's taking energy from inside me and somehow putting it out into the world. Even if I'm reaching out for a speaking opportunity or reaching out to somebody to build a relationship with them or creating a YouTube video or writing a blog, it's somehow about taking something in me and putting it out. And that takes a particular sort of energy as well. So I like to batch these things into different days. And then just sort of looping back a little bit to the deep work, the book, The Deep Work, about how much it's such a good book, honestly. I really if don't all rush and buy it yet, because two of you are gonna get a copy in the post next week anyway. So if you don't win the book bundle, go and buy this book. He makes such a strong case for the way that we have forgotten how to focus properly and how we don't set ourselves up to focus. And this is things like having emails open all the time instead of only checking emails at certain defined times of the day. It's about putting boundaries around your social media use. I go in the Facebook group for the membership every day, pretty much, but I set a timer and I go in for half an hour and I try and help as many people as I can in half an hour. And sometimes I'm not very good and I end up doing 45 minutes by mistake. That's not uncommon. But I literally try and limit the amount of time I'm spending on emails, on Facebook. Notifications are a really big one. Like if you have notifications, turn everything off. Just turn all notifications for everything, turn them off. If you can go and if you want to see if a message has come in for you, can go and look. So I have notifications on Facebook, but I don't have notifications anywhere that ping at me. So if I want to go and check my emails, I consciously decide to go and check my emails. My emails don't ping at me every time a new email comes in and says, "Hey, there's something really important happening over here. Let me interrupt whatever thing you're doing." And all of these things, like I don't have my I have my phone with the ringer off. I have the phone on silent. I have no notifications on for anything. So if I want to check email, if I need to check Facebook, if I need to check anything, I consciously choose to go into that app or into my email to have a look at what's come in when it suits me to do that, when it suits me to process things. And again, this is and what happens is the more that we're in like this distraction mode, the more you have notifications that ping at you, and when they ping, they distract you and you go off and look at them, the more likely you are that when you're doing your focus work, you can't keep your focus focused for more than 5 minutes because you're craving, you just want to open your social media or you just want to scroll your phone. It's like you're craving something else happening somewhere. And we need to retrain our brains to focus so that we can actually create good stuff in our businesses. We can create good content, we can create good marketing materials, we can do effective work and not And do it within a reasonable time frame so that then we can go off and get on with the rest of our lives. So, I mean, I could talk about all of this for hours and hours and hours and hours. And I feel a little bit like, oh, I haven't really done justice to any of that. But also, I don't know how many of you already do follow some of what I've just talked about, or how many of you know that actually this is an area of weakness for you and you need to tighten up. So I'd love to know from you if you want to type in, like, what are you taking from that? Are you recognizing actually I am quite good at this, or are you recognizing actually there's some areas here I need to tighten up? Maybe it's boundaries with friends and family, maybe it's boundaries with clients. Maybe it's more about how you become a bit more disciplined with your own attention during the day so that you're not being distracted by less important things. This is actually reminding me of a client a few years ago. I had a group mentoring program running, and I had a client called Susan, and she had a brilliant business, but she wasn't really making the progress she wanted to make with it. And of course, she worked at home and she had three teenagers and a husband. And of course, what did three teenagers and a husband think she was? Well, they thought she was mum and wife. And so she couldn't get any work done at all because it was constant, "Mum, where's this?" And that's right. She had a couple of them were studying their exams, and it was like, "Mum, where's this? Where's my shirt? Where's it?" And if they wanted her for something, they would just shout, "Mum." I get that. Like, that's what I did. I still do that a bit with my mum, even though she's in her 80s and I'm in my 50s. You go, "Mum." And what she did in the end was we spoke about it on calls a few times because she wasn't comfortable with the idea of this to begin with. But after having some conversations about just how important this business was to her, both in terms of the work she did, because she did work with schools, the work she did, but also how important it was to her personally, she actually sat down her family and had a family powwow. And she explained to her family exactly what she did as her business. They didn't really understand. She explained to them exactly what the work is that she does. She explained to them what she charged. They had no idea even what she charged. They were not taking her business seriously. They just thought it was some sort of mum's got a hobby. And she explained to them how important it was to her personally that she could be successful in this business and that she could, really make something of it. And as a family, they came to an agreement about her having regular office hours during which they were not going to interrupt her other than a genuine emergency. And it actually worked. And all it took was for her to explain to her family why what she was doing was important. And it was her that hadn't said that before. And so the family were not taking her business seriously. When she asked them to take it seriously, they did. So, and Meta is saying, "I had a similar conversation and they were quite respectful." Good. Let's have a look at the comments here now. So, hello, Victoria. I was glad to see you there, actually, Victoria. I'd already started chatting when I saw you arrived, but it was nice to see you. Nice to see that you'd arrived. You used to have that with your dad and sometimes your brother, but they don't do it as much anymore. Yeah, you do. We have to train because the problem. It might sound like really quite harsh, but the truth is, you have to decide how important is it to you that you can get this business working. And actually, these people that are important to you in your family, what would it mean to them if you could get your business working properly? And it might sound harsh to be like, well, you're not going to be at the beck and call of family and some of your friends anymore. But sometimes it's about being selfish as well. It's a bit about being a little bit selfish in order to give yourself a chance to accomplish something that is going to give you a sense of pride and a sense of accomplishment, and even the finances to be able to treat some of these people to things or spend quality time with them. Sabine says, "I use a focus timer." Okay, I've not done that actually. You can put it for 2 hours. I'd say I don't, but I do actually. You can put it for 2 hours of focus time, and the timer also calculates short breaks. Okay, I like that. Yes, is it called Focus Timer? Or do type it in. I actually use my phone. Every time I sit down to do a focus task, I set a timer on my phone and I usually give myself an hour per task, but I set the timer for 55 minutes so that I have a 5 minute break before the next hour. But sometimes what I do is, sometimes you sit down to do a task that you really don't want to do, or you want to do it, but you find it really hard to do, like really hard to find the energy and the focus. If it's a task that I really resist and that I really, there's that it's a big effort to get going with it, I set the timer for 20 minutes. I literally say, right, I'm going to do this thing just for 20 minutes. It's like I psychologically trick myself into thinking it's only going to be 20 minutes. And then by the time the timer goes off at 20 minutes, I've usually got into it, and then I shift the timer to the hour. So that's a good little trick as well. And then Victoria says, I only have Messenger on my laptop, not on my phone. Okay. Do you know what? I had a thought last week I was going to do the same thing, to be honest, because most people who send me messages on Messenger, they're connected to my business in some way. And on my phone, I don't have my work emails. I have my personal emails on my phone, but I don't have my work emails because it's too easy to be out and about somewhere at the weekend or out with family or standing in the queue at Tesco, and then I just swipe and I see an email that actually it would be so much more helpful if I hadn't seen it until I was actually at my desk. So I only have, yeah, and I have got, so I take Facebook off my phone a lot, and then I end up wanting to post a photo or something, and then I have to put it back on. So Facebook's ended up like being on there, but no work emails on my phone. And I like taking Messenger off, actually. I really like that idea. And Meta is reading Slow Productivity. Okay. I haven't even heard of that one. So brilliant. And Melis, boundaries with family, friends, and partner. Yep. I lived with a partner for a while. I lived with somebody for a couple of years. And yes, he had to learn. I'm at work now. This is my office. If the door's closed, I'm at work. Evgenia says focus is such an issue. Awaiting ADHD assessment and medication, maybe it will help. Yeah, and I think even if it is ADHD, these techniques are still things that you can experiment with to help. I mean, I'm not ADHD, so I can't. I don't want to sound like I'm trying to give you advice about something that I haven't got direct experience of, but I don't know, even the thing of tricking your brain by asking it to focus for 20 minutes, that might work. Like that's the one that when I'm the most scattered and I find it the hardest to settle down and focus, that 20 minute, I'm going to do it for 20 minutes. That's the secret, because I get into it and then I carry on going. Great. And then Marcelo's saying, I suddenly realized that social media is actually taking all my time and taking me away from the useful things I should be doing. I think you have to be so careful in the early days of business, because social media takes a long time to get off the ground and working for you when you're just starting out. And it doesn't mean it's not a valid thing to do, and it doesn't mean it won't work in future. But I think spending too much time on social media at the expense of actually building real life connections, like going networking or harnessing people in your warm network or doing research calls, or there's so many things that you could be doing that will work quite quickly if you do them well. And with social media, yes, of course, you could start your business and in week one, you just happen to write the most perfect post and it just captures people's attention and loads of people share it and like it and it goes viral and it takes off. Of course, that can happen. But often, when you're starting on social media, you don't have a lot of followers. So, and even then, I don't know about LinkedIn, but with Facebook and Instagram, only about 10% of your actual followers and friends will see anything you post. And so, and then if you've only got a small number of followers in the first place, then you're doing a lot of work for very few eyeballs getting on it, actually. Which doesn't mean you shouldn't do it at all, but it just takes time. Yeah. And MC says it definitely helps to focus on the overall vision. Yeah, absolutely. So this is exactly what we're aiming for in the membership. Set the overall vision. Always know where you're going. Never forget that. then the focus of the month, and then the focus of the day, and blocking off that time, even if it's just 2 hours a day, it makes all the difference, all the difference. And Meta uses Pomodoro technique. Lucy needs to set time boundaries, as you can work sporadically, and that can be a cause of friction. And yeah, it might be that you're able to say to your family, I've decided to set some more structured working hours. These are my working hours, and if you leave me alone and allow me to focus during these working hours, I will be free after X o'clock. That can probably make a difference. Okay, great. Have you missed the secret word? No, you haven't missed. Yes, you have, because I set an alarm to remind me about the secret word, and then the alarm must have gone off, and I think I just cancelled the alarm without even noticing. So the secret, thank you, Jill. Somebody should have reminded me ages ago. I didn't mean to make you all wait an hour for the secret word. The secret word is possibility. This is going to happen at this time on a Friday when I've done all those sessions every day, two sessions a day, and then today it was three sessions. So possibility. And thank you all for your patience. Secret word, final secret word of the word of the week, possibility. And then just from this point on, if anyone's got any questions about anything at all, just fire away. And I mean, if people want to start heading off because it's the Friday evening, or if anyone's got any questions, anything they want to talk about, and this might be wrap up questions about your business. It might be something about things I've taught during the week that you want more clarification on. It might be questions about the membership itself. I know some of you were there at lunchtime. I did a dedicated presentation about the membership, and we have put that up on the recordings page, and we've put it up in the Facebook group as well. So if anybody missed that, you can catch up with that. And do remember that if you have already joined the membership, and you win the prize of winning a 6 month or an annual membership, you will get a one-to-one with me in addition to getting your money that you paid refunded. Okay, great. And Victoria is going to have to dash off, but Victoria just joined. You just joined. You actually just joined this Business from the Heart experience this morning, didn't you? I did notice, but actually, it looks like we're not sending you emails, and that's a whole separate thing. So you signed up for something, but you've had no emails about it. So I'm not quite sure how you found your way to this call, but it's all a bit of a mystery. But we'll catch up on email separately anyway. Oh, Angie sorted you out. Perfect. Perfect, perfect. Yeah. Angie's my right-hand person. She's fantastic. She's my brain. If she was here, she would have made sure I didn't forget that secret word. Like if Angie was here, we'd have got that in at about the half an hour mark. She wouldn't have let me forget it. But she's not always with me, you see. Sometimes I'm on my own and I'm a bit rogue. And I need my brain is in the wealth dynamics, which I know, we haven't gone into loads of depth on this week, but I'm a star profile. And it means that I sit between the dynamo creative energy and the blaze people energy. And what it basically means is that I'm very big picture. I see possibility and I see potential. And that's how I can see the potential and possibility for all of your businesses. I can see strategy. I can see what's not working and what tweaks need to be made. And but it's all very high up here, big picture. And I'm really bad at the day-to-day, detailed, grounded organization, that smaller stuff. And that's okay because I've harnessed my strengths to build my business. But I need people like Angie to sort of hold things together and remind me of things and keep things more smooth running. And I have someone else who I have someone who does all my tech. I have Angie who organizes the making sure things happen on time. And of course, I didn't always have that. When I started, I did it all myself. But I learned as I was doing it, I learned what I really struggled with. And I learned what I mean, one of the things that I really probably the thing that I've always found the most heavy going in my business is email management. And it's interesting because it's not about the human at the end of the email. I like the human at the end of the email. You know, if I get an email from Rosie, I'll be like, oh, there's Rosie. Like, there's the energy that I receive when I receive the email, that's positive. But the idea of replying to emails is just so, it just is such a huge effort for me. So when I started hiring people, the first person I hired was somebody to look after email management for me. Now, I do respond to quite a few emails myself, but I don't have to. So it's somebody, it's mostly Angie's job these days, but then I can dip in if I want to, which is a completely different feeling from if it was all my responsibility. And then the next person I hired was a bookkeeper, because the next thing that I find difficult is, and with the accounts, it's not that I feel heavy or I really hate it. I'm just not very good at it. I just struggle to wrap my head around and really understand how, you know, how it makes sense, like proper accounting. So have someone else do that. And then the tech, I can figure out tech on my own, but it takes me an exceptionally long time. It's just not a good use of my time at all. So someone else to do the tech. But of course, at the beginning, it was just all me. And that's the idea, isn't it? You harness your strengths to bring in the money in order to pass out the stuff that you're not so good at to somebody else who can do it for you. Okay, great. And thank you, Jennifer, who says she's got to jump off, but we'll be joining the membership. Yay! I'm really happy. Lots of you from this week joining the membership, so I'm really pleased about that. And don't worry, by next week, when we have the welcome party, my energy will have come back. I'm very good at resetting myself. As long as I get to bed at a reasonable time, all I need is a night's sleep and I'm reset and I'm good to go again the next morning. And actually, in terms of events coming up, so Monday evening, we've got the Create a Business You Love, the webinar, which is really aimed at people who didn't come to this week, but you're very welcome to join in. Wednesday evening, we've got this energetics and mindset session around pricing and charging your value, which isn't really part of your new member onboarding. It's the existing membership. But you're absolutely welcome to come to that. If you're a member and you've joined, you can come to that. Thursday evening, we've got the welcome party, which is where I do an orientation and help ensure you know how to make the most of the membership to get best results. And we also do a bit of meeting and mingling between each other. So you're starting to get, continuing to get to know each other a bit better. And then there's a gap to let you just allow you all to settle in and orient yourselves. And then on the 24th of October in the afternoon, we've got the vision and planning workshop, the half day. So thank you, Jennifer. Marcelo says, you say mentioned something about research calls. So there is, they should be in your course area under additional resources. That the research calls is in the membership and in the course. So I'd have to log in to find them for you, but there should be some area in your course area called additional resources with a few extra things in. So maybe if you can't find them, drop us an email and we'll do your little video. And Rosie's heading off as well, and you joined. Wonderful. Look forward to seeing you soon. Has anyone else got any questions about anything? Anything at all? Like, you know, I'm happy to hang out here. Let's hang out. I'm happy to hang out for like another 20 minutes. And if there's anything useful that you all want to talk about, whether it's asking anything about the membership, whether it's any questions to help with your business, whether it's questions about my business, you know, there might be just things you're curious about knowing, you know, like conversations about team and Angie. And yes, everybody needs an Angie. I needed an Angie in my life. You hear a lot of people talk about the importance of hiring support in your business, and it's absolutely essential. And it's why I include it as part of your stage three milestones to start getting help, you know, start outsourcing, start getting help before you really need it. And even usually before you feel you can afford it. And part of that is because there's no guarantee that the person you find first is going to be really good at that job. This is the downside of the hiring, that you're re reliant on somebody other than you who may or may not be as proficient as they tell you they are. And so the sooner you start hiring people and the sooner you start creating processes for delegating, the easier it becomes to change person if they're not working out. So if you hire somebody and you train them in exactly what you want them to do through videos and written processes, and that person, after 3 weeks, you realize they're not actually the right person, you don't have to redo that training. You've got the training ready for the next person. And if you leave it too late, and I did, I made a big mistake in my business at the beginning. It wasn't my fault I made the mistake. Nobody gave me any advice. I was working with a business mentor who was entirely focused on making money quickly. He wasn't concerned about sustainability of a business or whether or not you burned out on it. He was just sell, sell, sell. And he didn't ever talk about getting the support in place. So my business grew very fast without the support, to a point where by the time I started hiring people, I didn't have time to teach them what to do. And so the sooner you start getting people in, the more, even if you have to hire a few people who don't quite work out, you're going to eventually get the person who does. And there's lots of people who work as professional VAs who will be very happy to start work with you for like 2 hours a week or 4 hours a month or something like that, just to get started and then grow with you as you need more hours. Okay, great. So there's a few questions there now while I'm chatting away. Oh, wow, there's loads of questions now. Wow. I thought we were just like in the home stretch there and we were just going to hang out and then boom, all these questions. This is not a problem. I can handle this. Right. So, Evgenia, at what point did you start a mailing list? These are quite interesting questions, actually, because I think it is interesting to ask me what I did, because I didn't necessarily do the right things, which is partly why I teach you all the right things. I just need to have a little drink. So, I started a mailing list. Yeah, I started a mailing list early and I had a downloadable lead magnet early. My first full year in business, I'd qualified as a coach. I thought I wanted to be a law of attraction coach. The one thing I knew for sure was that I didn't want anything to do with sales because I'd left that job behind me and I was never going to do that again. And I wanted to be a law of attraction coach. And then I was trying all these different things, but it wasn't business connected and it wasn't sales connected. But after my first year of floundering around, trying different niches, different messages, and nothing really felt right, I landed on this. I taught a workshop called Sales Success for Coaches for the coaching school where I had trained. Animus, some of you, I know Marcelo, you trained there. And interesting, I talk about business being an experimentation. I didn't really, my coach had suggested I did that. My heart wasn't really in it. I was like, yeah, I don't really want to teach sales, So I did that day. And it was on that day that I realized, oh my gosh, all this stuff that I think is common sense, that I thought everybody knew, they don't. I really have got something massive to offer businesses, something really transformational. And so that was at the end of November 1 year. And I had created my first lead magnet within 6 months of that. And it was awful. But I knew how important it was to grow my mailing list. I knew that at that time. Don't know how I did, but I was in various types of business programs. That's right. I joined a mentoring program around that time. So I was learning the sorts of things I'm teaching you about business. I was learning those for the first time. So I knew how important it was going to be to grow my mailing list. So I created my free giveaway really quite early. And it was just terrible. It was called 10 Top Tips for Getting More Sales or something like that. And it was videos. And they were so bad quality, like bad production. They were almost embarrassing. Some of them are still hanging about on YouTube, by the way. I'm wearing a red jumper. They're terrible. But you know what? I did it and I got them up. And I knew they weren't good enough and I knew they needed changing. And about another 6 months after that, I re-recorded the 7 Steps to Yes. Now it's been re-recorded again since then. I did it about 18 months ago, but the first one wasn't good. It was just good enough. And then 6 months later. So yes, I did start building my list very early. I didn't start emailing them for a few years though. So I knew to build my list, but I was too scared to actually send them any emails. So that didn't happen for another, I don't know, maybe another, I don't know, 18 months, 2 years before I started emailing people. Didn't quite have the courage to do that. Maybe not that long. Maybe that's my memory. Maybe it was 12, maybe it was a year. Perhaps it was a year that I was building a list and didn't email anybody. But yeah, that was a big moment sending the first email. And then MC says, I have a question regarding partnerships with other coaches, businesses, and how to get about it. So actually, rather than me go into that one right now, I covered that. Evgenia asked me that question on Wednesday evening. So if you find the mentoring call from day three and you find the list of questions and the timestamps, because that's quite a big, some things that, some questions I get asked, they're quite easy to answer. And other things I get asked, I can only answer them by giving you a full training, really. So I would say that would be a really, really useful place to start. And then if you are joining the membership, I don't know if you're thinking of joining the membership, there are trainings in the membership on how to do this. But basically, like the short and simple answer is build relationships, you know, like build genuine, real world relationships. It doesn't mean those relationships can't start on social media. Quite a lot of my business relationships did start on social media. And actually, you know, when I talk about how I've never used social media as a source of attracting clients, and I never have, I use it for other reasons, but I've never used it as a source of attracting clients. What I did in the first few years was I used it for networking. So I actively use social media to develop relationships with people on an individual one-to-one basis by joining in conversations and then private messaging people and building. So rather than social media as we think about it, which is broadcast and hope somebody notices it, this was actually more like imagine Facebook as a room full of people. I was sort of like what they say, working the room, you know, building my relationships there. So build genuine real world relationships. Also, have something of value to offer. So MC, I feel like I don't have the same sense of you and your business as I do some of the others because we haven't spoken during the week. So I don't know where you're at with your business or at the moment, but basically it's about like how do you position yourself? Because if you want to build partnerships with other coaches and you're a coach and you say about yourself, I'm a life coach, shall we do something together? This other coach is not going to know where you fit in. Like, well, you're a life coach, that's quite general. How do you know? Whereas, if I think about, as an example, Kanan, who's one of our members, specializes in coaching neurodiverse people. So, if another coach, let's say another coach has a business, they're a business coach, they might absolutely see the, or a business coach, or even a, okay, I've got a different example, a leadership coach. So, a leadership coach would absolutely see the value in partnering with Kanan, who coaches high achieving neurodiverse people, because Kanan is going to bring something that complements the work that the leadership coach already does. A bit like Marcelo, he coaches people in remission for cancer. And then there will be other coaches who offer something complementary to that. I can't, no examples popping into my mind. So it's important, you know, it comes back down to this ideal client messaging that if you stand out as being about something specific, it's much easier for somebody else to go, oh, I really like the sound of what you do. I could really see that complementing what I do. Why don't we talk about doing something together? And that can happen very naturally often if the compliment, if the synergy is really obvious, it can happen very quickly. You know, you don't even have to build a big relationship. It can just be like, oh, I quite like you. I quite like you. Oh, look, the things we do sort of fit together beautifully. Why don't we do something? Lucy says, what are the normal days of the week that the regular membership meetings are on? They vary between Tuesdays. Now, we do survey you, by the way. We survey, I answered this question earlier on, and we currently alternate the days, and we didn't used to. We used to have them on specific days of the week, but we alternated the time for different time zones. So the mentoring calls, for example, and the hot seat sessions, 1 month, it's at 1 month, they'll alternate between 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. in alternate months, because we've got members on different time zones and we've got members with different family commitments and different work commitments. And it means that even if somebody can't make it every month, by alternating, it means people can always make it every other month. And then in between times, they can listen to the recording, or if they've asked a question, they can pick up an answer to that question on the recording. And which reminds me, somebody sent a question in for this one this evening and I haven't answered it yet. So I must get to that shortly. And we recently, we survey the members about once a year, and we have recently started alternating them between Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And I'm not sure how it's going to work, whether people, you know, we've done it in response to what the members have said they want, but what I'm finding is it feels a little complicated explaining it, because you don't have a exact regular time each month when you know it's going to be. So the normal days of the week for the mentoring calls and the hot seats are Tuesdays and Wednesdays. The meetups, the online member meetups, are usually on Thursdays. And the guest expert, that varies. It's usually, it could be a Tuesday, Wednesday, or a Thursday, depending on the availability of the guests. We don't ever have sessions on a Monday, and we don't ever have sessions on a Friday. But other than that, so all of the events happen on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It seems to work, but it just feels complicated to explain. And I don't know what will happen when we next do a survey, whether we'll put them back on regular days so that you always know, oh, I know that call is on a Thursday. So I don't know how helpful my answer is there. And Meta says, I'm a researcher. I wonder if you have experience with other coaches using research as the basis for free giveaways. I don't really understand the question there. Do you want to unmute yourself and explain?
Sorry, I typed it wrongly. So I'm thinking of using of to conduct research about how coaching has been used in the international sector and social impact sectors, and use that evidence as a way of for creating my, free giveaway or getting myself known. And I haven't heard that mentioned. I've only heard about books or But I just wanted to know, if there's appetite for that, or if there's a specific format that may suit best when it's research rather than more of communicative, tools.
I love the idea, by the way. I think it's a brilliant idea, because you also, in the process of doing the research, you're going to be developing relationships with people. And then you can be saying, I'm going to be putting your research into a guide or into a report. And when I, and when I have, I'll send you a copy. So I really like that. And I like the fact that it will be like a sort of, you're going to be drawing upon these research. However you're doing the research, you're going to be drawing on that, so it's going to feel more factual than just this is my opinion. I don't know that it matters what the format is. You could put it into a report or whatever you feel would be most appropriate and most valued for the types of clients you're working with, because we're all working with such ranges of clients. Like for me, a video series makes sense. For your clients, they might not want to sit and watch a video series. They might rather, they're probably more used to reading a document or a slightly more formal report. So yeah, it's more about you thinking what format is going to feel valuable and quality to my clients, and when they download it, they're going to find this really useful. The format of it, as long as it looks professional, I don't think this format of it really looks professional and is something that somebody would value and would create a good impression of you in their minds. That's sort of what you're aiming for, really. I mean, there is a training in the members area on how to create your free giveaway, but I don't think that would answer this question. Because you're not creating a free, you're creating a different type of a something to give.
Thanks, that's helpful.
Okay, and then Marcelo and I, you might need to remind me, is it actually, can you just unmute and remind me, is it Marcelo or Marcello? Okay,
Marcelo.
Marcelo, thank you.
Marcelo.
Marcelo, I just keep saying Marcello, and then in the back of my mind, I'm going, that's not right. Marcelo says, I have the impression that your business is heavily automated, as I'm getting very consistent prompts with specific actions. How long did it take to get to this level? I am in stage five of my business. My business is very automated now, and it's taken years. So some elements of it got automated very early. So like the very first time I ever ran the Get More Clients Saying Yes course, we set up a series of automated emails to deliver the modules of that course and to deliver reminders when the Q&A calls are. And those automations have been in place for like over a decade. And when we run the course again, we just replicate the whole thing and insert new dates in. With the membership, it's a little different because we have to build the membership every single month. It's not automated because the call times alternate and the days of the week change and the guest experts at a different time. And actually, the membership is quite labor intensive. One of my team members is based in the Philippines and she does a lot of the very manual tech stuff for us, but it is actually quite labor intensive. And if we didn't alternate the time, if we didn't alternate the calls to meet the different time zones and move and offer different days to make sure that everybody could attend, it would probably be a far easier business to run. So the membership is highly manual. We build the automation every single month for that particular month. The membership onboarding, we did a really, and I know you're not in the membership, so you won't have experienced it yet, but we basically stopped everything in the business for a couple of months just to build the membership onboarding because we were finding that members were leaving because they couldn't find their way around. They were overwhelmed by all the content. It was like, if we don't educate people in how to use the membership, then people just log in, go, I don't even know where to start. Then they don't use it, then they cancel. And we realized that it was absolutely like business critical to create a really good onboarding journey for new members. So there's an email that goes out like literally every couple of days saying, here's what you need to know next. And we spent, I don't know, we probably spent not full time because there's lots of other things going on in the business and we were still running the membership. We probably spent maybe 3 months working on the membership automation, including the welcome pack. What else is automated? And that's automated. Yeah, so I've got some things are automated and some things look automated, but they're actually man there's a lot of manual that goes in. But I am in my 13th year of business, but some of the automations, like when I deliver, if you sign up for my free giveaway, the 7 Steps to Yes, you will get a series of emails in the week following you signing up for that. Well, those emails have existed since day dot, like 12 years. So some of my automations have been in place from the very beginning. So like when Meta sets up her new report to send out when someone signs up, ideally you'll add a series of follow-up emails to that. Well, those are things that you'll put in place really quite early in your business. You'll put them in stage two. But if you're going to set up like an automated evergreen sales funnel or an automated onboarding sequence or that sort of thing, those sort of things might come much later. So they just sort of vary. They vary in when they came along. Monica says, I find it difficult to do work in little steps and I want to do everything at once. How do you choose and practice the one thing? Well, you choose your one thing by coming to the vision and planning workshop. So, as one of our current members, I'm hoping you've been to the vision and planning workshop before, and that's how you set your one thing. How you practice the one thing, I think That has to be like an internal discipline that you develop yourself to go. One of the things that I find really useful, do you know what happens in the membership, Monica? You'll know this because you're in there. Every month we have a post called the One Thing Post, and we ask our members to say on that post, what is your one thing for this month? So we're in October now, at the beginning of October, what is your one thing for the month? And then at the end of the month, we post again, and everybody who answered on the original post, we tag them to ask them to be accountable. Did you do your one thing? And honestly, the number of times that people respond, I can't remember what my one thing is. But they knew it at the beginning of the month because they typed it in, but they didn't remember. Now, if you don't remember what your one thing is, how are you going to do it? Like, how are you possibly going to achieve your one thing when you don't even know what it is? And so what I do is I have it on a post-it note on a I've got like a whiteboard on the corner of my desk, and I have the one thing on a post-it note right there every single day. I can see it. In a place I lived in before the current place, you know how like just the layout of where you live is always different. I currently have my office in my living room because it's a much I moved here from my office at the beginning of the year because it's a much nicer room. I've got a big window and I don't feel as cut off from the world. So I don't really want to have my vision and planning sheet in my living room for anyone to see it. But when I had a dedicated office, I had my one thing, and you don't all know about this plan yet, but you're going to come up with your one thing plan, and it's going to be like a big is it A3? Like a big A3 sheet of paper, or even bigger, maybe it's A6, I don't know, big piece of card or big piece of paper. And I would just have my one thing for the month, in that month, on that sheet. And I would come and literally every single morning I would look at that one thing. You see, Marcelo's already got something similar, but I would literally every single day I would walk into my office and I would clock, that's my one thing. Like, that's my one thing. That's my one thing. Even if I didn't have time to get to it that day, that's my one thing. So you have to know what it is and stick it somewhere where you're going to see it every single day. You could stick it down on your, if you've got a laptop, you could stick it to a corner of your laptop. And then you have to create the time to work on it. And if you struggle with focus and you're trying to do too many things at once, if you even just spent 1 hour a day on the one thing that you have identified is the most important thing for you to take your business forward right now, 1 hour a day on that one thing, and you do it every single day, you're going to make progress on it. And the biggest problem people have is they're trying to make progress on too many things at once, and by the end of the month, they have actually made progress on none of them. And for somebody who wants to do everything at once, everything now, the idea of saying, just do one thing, feels really limiting and it feels really boring. But you know what? If you focus on the one thing, you're actually going to get this thing completed. And now you've got something in your business that's working and it's given you results. And then you can move on to the next thing. Because I can tell you one thing, focusing on one thing at a time for some people feels really boring, right? But there is nothing boring about a business that is working, that is feeling rewarding, where you've actually got customers buying from you, where you're actually making money from it. There's absolutely nothing boring about that whatsoever. So somehow, if you can find the discipline, even if it's just an hour a day on the thing that you said is the main one thing, and then the rest of the day you play with different projects, but just if you know what that one thing is, and you just come back to it every day, you're gonna The aim is that you want to complete every month, you want to complete your core one thing that you set for that month, because then you're moving forward. Okay, and then I've got a final question, which was sent in earlier on, and now I have to remember where it is, because Super Angie, she's so organized, she'll gather the questions and she gives them to me, and then I forget to actually open the email. So where is this one from this afternoon? Okay, I can't find it. I'm gonna have to go to my emails because I know it's in my emails. Okay, here it is. So this was Rina, and Rina was asking about workshop messaging. So how can I align my workshop messaging to attract ambitious women who may not recognize their need for fulfillment and alignment? And how can I best showcase my one-to-one coaching skills in this sort of a group setting? So, interestingly enough, okay, and there's a lot of other information on here actually. So my ideal client is an ambitious woman in her 30s. And my goal is to help her design a life that feels as good on the inside as it looks on the outside. How do I get my workshop message to align with what these women think they need versus what I know they really need? So that will come down, that is coming. I mean, ultimately, this is where research calls come in because. And I know you're not here, Rena, so this is slightly awkward to answer without you actually being here. Like if we were here on a call, we could actually discuss it. But I could come up with some ideas of what you could say in your messaging. But I'd be guessing, I'd be trying to, from a marketer's point of view, I'd be trying to put myself in the shoes of those women and come up, and I'd be guessing, I'd be making suggestions. Oh, this is something you could say. This is something you can say. But do you know? Who will actually tell you what they really want is the women themselves. And this is exactly what the research calls is for. It's to get on calls with, say, 10 women who fit that description, who recognize that in the description, and ask them, what is it? Not you don't only ask them this, there's other questions that you ask, but one of the questions that you will ask them is, what is it that you really want more than anything? And then you can set up your workshop messaging to talk about the fact that you're going to help them with the thing that they've said they want more than anything. And then when they arrive at the workshop, that's where you can start to educate them in the fact that part of the way that you help is so you've said there that. You know that the thing they need help with is addressing life scripts shaped by early conditional and societal expectations. So your women might not be walking around with a full awareness of this, but when you bring them into your workshop and you start talking to them about this, they're going to have that recognition. And you can give them examples and they'll be like, oh, of course, because my grandmother used to say that thing to me all the time. And oh my gosh, I saw my dad treat my mum like that. And you help raise the awareness, and then they recognize the value of working on those things. So yes, your marketing is focused on what they know they want, but then once they're with you in your world, that's where you can start to introduce the things that you know that they really need. And that comes from, I would say, now if we were here, if you were here, if we were on a mentoring call in the membership, we could bounce ideas around. But ultimately, the way to get this information is to go directly to women who fit that profile because they will tell you in their own words. And then you said, how can I best showcase my one-to-one coaching skills in this sort of group setting? That is really interesting. I would be inclined to not try to do that. It's really quite hard, and it's why I don't encourage people to offer free coaching other than a thank you for the research calls, because it's really hard to demonstrate how great coaching is, right? Because you're almost like putting on a performance. You're having to be a really great coach and show them how great the coaching is. And even if you do a really great job of coaching this one individual person, the people watching might not be going on that same internal journey. It doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. I think you can absolutely do some one-to-one coaching within the workshop. But I don't know. There's something about I wouldn't try and sell your coaching by demonstrating coaching. I think you can do it as part of the workshop, but I think if you try and sell it by demonstrating, you're going to fall down every time. I think you're much better to sell it by presenting it in terms of its values, its benefits. If you do decide to join the membership, I know you're thinking about it at the moment. There's a couple of trainings in there that would be useful for you. One is called Selling from Presentations, which will help you to be able to craft that workshop. So, and at the end of the workshop, present what you have to offer in a way that presents the value to the people that are there, and then perhaps invite them off that workshop to have a one-to-one call with you. Again, there's pros and cons. Some people would make an offer at the workshop and ask people to buy there and then, depending on the price point and how skilled you are at selling one to many. It's not somewhere where I'd recommend people start. I'd recommend that you sell the benefits, sell the value of the one-to-one coaching, and then invite them to have a one-to-one call to find out more. And that becomes like the actual sales conversation. So, with it getting late on Friday and my brain slowing down a little bit, and you not being here to sort of have the two-way conversation with, hopefully that is helpful a little bit. And but absolutely, you can absolutely coach individuals with people witnessing. So Beatrice, who's the coach inside the membership, she used to do some of our mindset sessions, and she actually just used to coach. She would pick a volunteer, the volunteer would volunteer, and she would coach the volunteer around whatever the issue was. There would usually be a topic. So B would say something like, "This month I'm going to be doing a mindset session around procrastination. Who here struggles with procrastination that would like to be coached?" And then B would coach that person with everybody else listening. And the people listening would obviously be able to take their own internal journey while the one person is being coached and apply it to themselves at the same time. I would say don't do the whole workshop like that. You might be better doing the workshop using group coaching. Because I guess just to summarize, I'm not a fan of proving how good coaching is by demonstrating it. That's basically what it boils down to. You're much better to sell coaching by selling the end result and the benefits and the value of coaching rather than demonstrating coaching, because often people don't get it. Like, people often just don't get it in the moment. It's really hard to demonstrate how powerful coaching is in just a short window. Sometimes you need 6 weeks to create a big transformation for somebody. Sometimes you need 6 months. So, I hope that was helpful-ish for this time of the day. Okay, so I think. Oh, that's Marlies's MC. Hello. Do you know, Marlies, I've been seeing this name this today and yesterday, this MC, and thinking, oh, there's somebody that I haven't really connected with yet. And I didn't realize it was you. And of course, I know who Marlies is, and you have joined the membership. So, yes, I could have given a completely different context to my answer if I'd realized it was you. Hello, hello. Yeah. Okay, so I think this is a good point to wrap up. Thank you all for, thank you for being here, like right through till the end. Mater, Marlies, Sabine, Monica, Marcelo, not so much because he just slid in yesterday afternoon and he's only been here for a day and a half. But the others of you, we've been here for the whole week. So thank you so much for that. And I get to go and collapse now, and then I'll be back Monday evening. But I'm going to be keeping an eye on my emails over the weekend. So if anyone has got questions, I say that. I think at the, yeah. You've all actually, Monica, Marlies, Sabine, you're already in. Meta, I know you're contemplating. I did answer it. Did you listen to the answer on the earlier call? No, that's okay.
Not yet, but I know it's minute 25.
Okay, Angie's already got back to you. Okay. If you want to, actually, do you know what I could do? Let me just stop the recording here. Let's wrap up this call. Just say, like, officially there, we bring it to an end, and then I can end the recording, and then we're sort of done with that. So, and thank you all for being here for this whole week. I am flagging. I'm not going to pretend. I am really flagging right now, so I'm definitely ready for a break. I'm going to stop the recording.